From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 545, Azure and the Azure Stack with guest Aidan Finn, recorded Tuesday, July 25th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Today, I'm talking to Aidan Finn, a Microsoft valuable professional with the Hyper-V expertise. And Aidan's been working in the IT infrastructure world since 1996 and is the technical sales lead for Micro Warehouse, a Microsoft distributor in Ireland. Welcome back, sir.
Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
I am well. And, you know, no rest for the wicked. Lots to talk about. You know, we start worrying if this stuff's ever going to get boring, and it just gets crazier and crazier every day.
It does. It gets absolutely insane, and there is no rest for the wicked.
Yes.
And I've been really wicked, so.
Some of us have been wickeder than others.
Yeah. So it's just constant change. Every time you try to close your eyes, something new pops up.
And I caught your blog post going back to the Inspire show, which was, Inspire was sort of that's the old partner conference, right?
Yep. It is. It's an important conference for anyone who works for a Microsoft partner. Mainly the attendees there would be, you know, salespeople, licensing, right, that sort of thing. But it has an impact on anyone who's working in the Microsoft partner world.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
And a big impact on anyone who deals with a Microsoft partner, which is, you know, just about every business really who consumes Microsoft software or services.
Well, and it's funny that at the same time they were doing that event, they did the big shakeup back in Redmond.
Yeah.
Where they've completely changed the sales org. I think for the better, that it's far more focused on making sure people are productive with Azure than it is about selling boxes of software.
Yeah, because that business is ticking along. Mm-hmm, you know, I've seen some stuff in the press where, you know, some journalists have been saying, oh, well, Microsoft, are trying to kill off, you know, Windows Server and stuff like that. Nothing could be further from the truth,
right?
To be quite honest. You know, Windows Server continues to be developed, not only because there's a big business for it, but because it's at the heart of Azure. And
sure.
Because Azure is running a mixture of 2012 R2 and more recently Windows Server 2016, as you can see on the new DV3, EV3, and M-series hosts.
Yeah.
With cool features like Hyper-V nested virtualization. But yeah, that sales organization, it's changed quite a bit. So they've got new ways of interacting with their managed partners.
Mm-hmm. And that you fall into that category, right?
Yeah. So as a distributor, we would be a managed partner. We're quite active in the cloud services like Office 365 and Azure. So we're a CSP distributor of Microsoft services. We're the leading CSP distributor, actually, not only in Ireland, but from what we're hearing in Western Europe region.
Wow.
As well. And we've been quite successful with Azure.
I mean, I think that the way that Azure is sold and the way you basically compensated, kind of it's a virtuous alignment, right? You're only going to make money when your customer gets value from Azure, when they actually do something,
yeah,
presumably useful. I guess you could build a bunch of VMs that just spun cycles and did nothing useful, but I would hope they would turn that stuff off. And it's just only when you actually get good value from it that it actually costs you money.
Yeah, and Microsoft, well, Satya Nadella realized that pretty early on, I think, when he rose up to being CEO. So he changed how sales targets were done within Microsoft. So he stopped rewarding people based on, you know, some of these air quote sales.
Right.
It's one thing to say, you know, I've sold X, Y, Z amount of Azure, but that can be funny money sometimes.
Sure.
Those of us who work on the inside of the channel will understand that there's sales and then there's sales. You know, when businesses were getting, you know, an Azure subscription or an Azure agreement when they didn't ask for it, very often that was funny money,
right,
where Peter was robbed to pay Paul.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was discounts on other things that weren't necessarily passed on to the customer, and those discounts were then used to pay for, you know, other things where there was sales targets that weren't being hit. But Nadella noticed that and realized that, and he switched over from sales targets to consumption targets.
Right.
And then you've got the CSP program, which is cloud solution provider. Mm-hmm. It's not cloud Azure or cloud sales provider. Because Microsoft realized that when you've got a Microsoft partner working with a customer and giving them a solution, hopefully a managed service solution, because that's what Microsoft want, is partners to do services, wrap services around cloud products, not just pass on a subscription and wish the customer best of luck.
Yeah, yeah.
That then there's that cycle where, you know, the customer is getting a better solution, the partner is getting consulting work out of that, and that's where they make their money. Mm-hmm. It's not on selling licenses or subscriptions, it's services. And, you know, you get that cycle where, you know, the customer is getting more from it, the partner's getting more business out of it, doing more work, getting more managed service contracts. And Microsoft are winning because they're getting more consumption.
Sure. Yeah. And it all goes together. The only question is, do you hit a point where the app is done, like that you could actually work yourself out of a job?
You're a developer. You know, there's always another app.
Yeah. Well, I look at this at IT too, because, you know, folks come at me saying, I'm worried about the cloud's going to get rid of my job. It's like, have you met a single IT department that got to the bottom of their to-do list ever?
Here's what I think of Azure. And I was saying this today in my intro to Azure VMs course that I'm running this week, which is Azure isn't outsourcing.
Right.
It changes the job. The only person who really has to worry about Azure is the disk monkey.
Screwdriver flippers too, right?
Yeah, Microsoft take care of the hardware.
Yeah.
What your job as an IT person is to take care of the software.
Mm-hmm.
So Microsoft will bring you to the point where they will get your VM up and running. And after that, they really do not care. Everything that happens inside that VM from the IT infrastructure world is your responsibility.
Right.
And on the PaaS side, they'll get you up to having your web jobs running, your functions running, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then from the developer point of view, everything that happens inside of that is your job. So there's always more work.
Sure. And either way, you know, you're just moving up the stack. There's so much more value we can provide in IT, getting beyond just keeping the apps running, you know, watching the gauges go, right? There's the preventative security modeling. There's all of these data analytics options. Like, we've only got more and more tools to go deeper into our value proposition to the organization.
Absolutely. The business does not care about the flashing lights in the dark room.
Nope. They just want it to work.
Yeah. They care about being able to get the latest report. They care about, you know, making use of that massive repository of data that's sitting, you know, on a sand somewhere that A, costs a ton of money to keep it there, and B, well, what are we doing with it?
Yeah.
You know, speaking of Inspire, they did show a video from, I think it was Wales Water was the name of the organization, and Hitachi Consulting had gone in there and found, I think it was 95% of their data was never analyzed.
Wow.
And they said, okay, let's change where we store the data because we can reduce the cost of it and move it to the cloud. And B, let's start bringing things like machine learning and some of the analytics features that are available in the Azure, present that data in tools like Power BI so it's actually easy to visualize and consume. And all of a sudden, they're getting value out of this massive repository of data that doesn't cost as much to keep anymore.
Yeah, and a great tooling. You know, it's funny how much I built out good database infrastructure and things like that, but to get into analytics tools, those were very expensive things.
Mm.
And the fact that it's just part of your Azure subscription now, so you have all these sort of top-tier tools, and they only make Microsoft money when you use them, so they're highly incented to make them easy to use.
Yeah.
I think it's wildly powerful.
Yeah, I'm seeing that make an impact on my customers as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's been interesting. So we were told a story recently by Microsoft Ireland. So I'd helped out one partner spec out and price a solution based on web apps.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised when that partner called me up and said, A, we're looking at doing an Azure job. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I didn't think you guys were interested in Azure. And I thought I was going to have the usual conversation about disk size and VMs and how much is a VM in the cloud and stuff like that. And that's not where they wanted to go at all. They said, yeah, we're looking at deploying this using the Service Fabric, and we're just looking to see if you think this is an okay design. And I was like, whoa, hold on.
Wow.
That's developer talk. I know you as a Microsoft partner, works in small, medium enterprise and does infrastructure stuff. What's going on here? Oh, yeah, we have developers. Like, we got developers because we were doing Office 365 and we were doing some SharePoint stuff. And, you know, we hired developers for that. And we just thought it was a natural transition to go over to Azure. I was like, wow. So I helped them out. Pricing was going to be, I think it was going to be 1,000 or 2,000 euros a month for this right. application. And they told me, yeah, we're going up against another competitor who went down with a traditional on-prem design. It was going to be too expensive, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, probably a six-figure number worth of on-premise infrastructure and a couple of guys in lab coats to keep healthy.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing was we found out then through the grapevine that this other partner that had gone in, who has been slow to adopt the cloud, went in with a legacy SAN plus servers plus virtualization offering, and it was coming in at a six-figure sum yeah. of capital expenditure. So yeah. money up front.
Middle six figures, I bet.
Yeah, it was going to be a substantial amount of money versus a couple of grand a month.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an easy business decision.
Yeah, the amortization on that is huge, man. Like, it's just... Yeah. You know, you can buy a lot of Azure for a long time for the price of a significant SAN infrastructure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's ridiculous when you look at the cost of a SAN versus how you can do things in many other ways in the Azure world or in the Microsoft world, whether it's on-prem, whether it's hybrid with Storage Simple, whether it's... You know, Storage Spaces Direct or Storage Spaces Classic on JBOD. It's just pure Azure play. And there's just so many different ways you can do it and save a fortune and your performance goes up.
And you've got better resiliency and you don't need as much monitoring time. I think that's the biggest whammy when I'm talking to folks. It's like, you don't have three shift coverage of your data center. There's nobody around at night, you know, it's just, that's reality.
Yeah.
It's too expensive. And the fact that there's somebody on at all times, that's on top of the problem. So by the time you've heard about it, it's probably already fixed. It's just, there are relatively few companies that deliver at that level of support.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like, I've been playing a bit with Azure Monitor lately. So for folks who don't know what that is, Azure has tons of monitoring that you can turn on, but before Azure Monitor existed, it was all distributed throughout all your resources.
Right.
So it was scattered everywhere, and Azure Monitor just has this way of bringing all that to one central point. And it's interesting when you go in there and you start looking at some of the analytics stuff, so the health of the environment itself, the health of Azure, and it's like you can see all these little niggly things that have cropped up, and they report it all. It, you know, anyone can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set up alerts for this stuff as well. And it's just funny looking through it going, yeah, never noticed that. Nope, never noticed that. Nope, never noticed that.
That's life, right? It's like they're running at a different level of instrumentation than you normally would.
Yeah. And they're quite open about every single little niggling thing. You'd think, oh, if I was in IT, I'd be trying to keep that from the business.
Well, I also like the ones where they're sending you messages about optimizing applications, optimizing databases and things that will actually reduce your bill.
Yeah.
At the same time as, you know, make your app perform better.
Yeah, again, I'm in a sales business. I don't want to be reducing anyone's bill. my boss was actually joking with me about that the other day where, you know, I was talking about some stuff, you know, I was, you know, making a new training course I'm writing. I'm talking about how to, you know, save money on VMs and stuff like that. And the boss was like, yeah, we don't want to be telling customers that, do we?
At the same time, you know, if it's, you're in for the long haul and you can keep optimizing them so that they use it more, there's something to be said there. I guess we'll have to see if it comes out in the wash.
Yeah, absolutely.
Aiden, give me 1 second here to pay the bills. Have you looked at Google Cloud Platform yet? GCP supports Windows Server 2008, 2012, 2016, as well as SQL Server 2012, 2014, 2016 Standard, Web, and Enterprise Editions. Your developers can build their ASP.NET applications directly on Google Cloud Platform with Visual Studio integration. Prefer containers? Google Cloud Platform is the original Kubernetes container environment. And if you need help, GCP has a great set of partners, including Capgemini, Neudesic, and Magenic to help you get your workloads across. Go to gcp.runasradio.com to get your free trial today. And you're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell, talking to Aiden Finn. And we meant to talk a little about Azure Stack. We talked about Azure, but Azure Stack is now finally a product after many, many months of them saying it's coming and coming and coming.
Yeah. Big piece of news. Mm-hmm. The hybrid cloud is real, despite what some cloud consultants and experts and journalist types would say. it does actually exist.
And so you guys are now carrying this product.
No. So Azure Stack's interesting. if you've ever worked or heard of anyone who's worked on a very large virtualization, you've probably experienced that it takes a long time to install, configure.
Yes.
You may have heard of people doing cloud computing on-prem, not big, long projects, but lots of moving pieces and everything. Lots of hardware dependencies, and that's where things can really fall down.
Sure.
And probably the best description or reasoning I heard for all this was probably from Jeffrey Snover. And he said, you know, there's a lot of people out there who can do private cloud and who can do a great job of it. And it takes a long time. But the problem is each one of these private clouds that they create is a snowflake cloud.
Right.
It's unique. So you get a very large organization, they can end up with lots of these snowflake clouds. And you have an inconsistent experience for the consumers of those clouds, be they IT pros or developers. Microsoft wanted to get rid of that, get rid of all the hardware variables as well, like VMQ. Good old VMQ. We love VMQ in the Hyper-V world. But they wanted to get rid of all those problems and say, we want you to be able to consume a private cloud in a matter of days. So from you go from the point of ordering to the point of being able to run this thing. We want you to measure that in days, not in months or years. So when you go in and you order this, and you will order it from HPE, Dell, or Lenovo to begin with,
right,
and Cisco will be coming on stream later in the year, you'll go through a very simple process of ordering and sizing this thing. And then some weeks afterwards, it's July at the moment, they're accepting orders. The first deliveries will actually be in September because there's still a bit of a, you know, a RTM process going on at the moment with it. But once that real process kicks in, the thing will get wheeled in and there'll probably be a few days engagement to get it powered up in your environment. And then that's it. You start consuming it through the admin portal and the Azure portal. There is no logging into the OS. There is no updating firmwares because that stuff just is not available to you.
No, you don't
you
do
will
that.
Have a lockdown controlled cloud. So you kind of consider it as being like a server that happens to be made up of several servers. So it's going to be a different experience for those people who do get it. But the idea is it's supposed to be very Azure-like. In fact, it is Azure, if you want to call it that. Because from the consumption point of view, it absolutely is Azure. And it's very locked down, very controlled. And it is very much a partner play, but through those OEMs. So the Dells, the Lenovos, the HPEs, and Cisco.
Which I see them all as hardware vendors, ultimately.
Yeah. Their play is they want to sell you the hardware.
Right.
And Microsoft's play is that they want to give you a quality environment that's very, very controlled.
Right.
So this is more than just, here's the HCL from Microsoft, and here's all the things that will work with Windows Server 2016. It's a very different experience to that, because personally speaking, I think an awful lot of the stuff that you'll find on the HCL in the past has been junk. We saw awful problems for people who had Emulex NICs on Blade servers in Windows Server 2012 or 2.
Right.
That went on for, I think, 9 months. Anyone who has a 1 gig NIC on Hyper-V hopefully knows to turn off VMQ because the drivers and the firmware are junk and cause nothing but problems on 1 gig NICs.
Right.
And that comes from Microsoft. Turn that off. And that's not me. Now, the comment about it being junk, that's me. but Microsoft's telling you on 1 gig NICs, turn off VMQ. 10 gig faster, keep your VMQ. Just do some heavy testing first when you do a new deployment. But you really do want VMQ on 10 gig or faster NICs.
But with Azure Stack?
Azure Stack, you don't care. That's all configured.
Right.
You know, you've got your high-speed NICs. Hopefully, they've got RDMA. The switches have been configured to handle the DCB and the PFC and all that stuff. You don't care.
Well, you don't really get to specify the hardware, right? There's just sort of kits. It comes a certain way, and that's how it is.
Basically, I think you define sizes.
Right.
And that's pretty much it.
Now, you're back to a CapEx acquisition. This is now a big cash outlay up front?
Not necessarily. So I don't know exactly how Dell, HPE, and Lenovo are doing this, but I have a feeling that they do have a pay-as-you-go model. Microsoft certainly do. So there is no buying Windows Server here. There is no buying Windows Azure Stack here. You license it on a consumption basis, either through an enterprise agreement or through the CSP channel. And that's more than likely going to be through Dell, HPE, and Lenovo's own CSP agreements rather than distributors like ourselves.
Right.
And that basically means that when I deploy a D3 virtual machine on Azure Stack, I will pay for a D3 virtual machine. I don't pay for the host. I just pay for the virtual machine. Now, it's a cheaper rate than you would get with Azure because you've had to buy hardware and you've had to pay for electricity and rack space and all that sort of thing. So it's going to be cheaper than Azure.
But I imagine the all-up cost is higher for Azure Stack than it is for Azure.
Just, I would expect it would be because, you know, there's one thing about buying a few racks of servers. Then there is the whole world of Microsoft where you build your own servers for several million hosts.
Right.
World. The discounts are different.
They're just working at a different scale. But then, how much of the care and feeding are you responsible for? Do they just specify how much power, how much cooling, and sort of conditions for the space? And after that, you don't touch it?
Pretty much.
Well, I mean, what if there's hardware problems?
You're under a support contract.
Right.
In fact, you also have to have a Microsoft support contract. And so you will have support contracts to cover you on the hardware and the software. You basically, and the updates are managed by Microsoft as well, because they want to keep you in sync with Azure.
I got to think the whole point here is that whatever apps you're running should run exactly the same on Azure Stack as they run in Azure.
Well, yeah, it's consistent. So you have the same PowerShell, you have the same JSON, you have the same admin experience. You can even federate the marketplace. So if you want to use images from Azure on your private Azure Stack, you can.
Nice.
So, you know, the example Microsoft gave was maybe use Azure for your test dev because you have this burst out capacity. You pay for what you use while it's running and while it exists.
Yep.
And you build your application using images in the Azure marketplace. So maybe you use the Ubuntu's or the Windows servers or whatever it is from the marketplace up in Azure. And you build a JSON file for your test deployments. And then when you're ready to deploy on-prem in your Azure Stack, you take your JSON, you federate the OS images down to your own Azure Stack. So you're using the images from Azure that you developed and tested on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you apply your JSON and bada bing, you have your deployment completely consistent with what you deployed up in the cloud or the public cloud. And then you just redeploy your code there and you should have a consistent experience.
Now, do you see people doing this purely from a data sovereignty perspective? Like what kind of customers are interested in Azure Stack in your world?
Definitely the data sovereignty thing, I think, is going to have an impact.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Microsoft have tried to do what they can with, you know, the Azure Germany type thing and stuff like that. But there's an awful lot more countries. I expect that my MVP colleagues like Thomas Maurer and Michael Roofley in countries like Switzerland are going to be doing an awful lot of this.
Sure. I was looking at it, you know, I'm putting on my humanitarian toolbox hat. I had a conversation with Jeff Snover about this. It's like, you know, during the Ebola crisis, we needed an awful lot of data to come and go from places like Cote d'Ivory. And it was very, you know, they just don't have that much in the way of bandwidth. If I could have put a ship off the coast with microwave relays on it that had a bunch of Azure Stack in it, then we'd have this ultra low latency environment during the crisis. But when the crisis ends, I can offload the work back to the nearest data center, which at that time was Ireland, but maybe now it's South Africa. I'd actually have to look at the latency and the ship can go about it, you know, go on to its next thing. So I just love that flexibility to say during for a certain set of time, months, maybe years, we have this ultra low latency setup. And then when we're done, you don't turn it off. You just move it into a higher latency environment.
Yeah, that's a cool example, actually.
Yeah.
That's cooler than the one Microsoft have been talking about, which is a cruise ship.
The cruise ship made me think of it. But it's like, I have this problem, right? We're working with projects and we're running a fair bit of Azure on the behalf of different charities. But when we were dealing with the Ebola crisis, which is before a lot of this stuff, latency was a huge issue. And, you know, there's just no substitute for being closer. So all I got to do is find someone who can pay for a ship for me. The Azure Stack part is probably pretty easy. The connectivity piece is going to be a bit trickier.
Yeah, but if you can do microwave links or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that should be more feasible, I would have thought. And if you're talking about a coastal country as well.
Yeah.
So as long as you keep it on the horizon or whatever, you should be able to do that fairly easily.
Yeah. I mean, you could go as far as to load this into semi-trailer trucks and set it up with generators and so forth. But you get the idea now that we could bring the cloud where it's needed for a period of time. And know that, which that already happens today, it's just not cloud, right? We have emergency computing resources. We have hospital ships and things. But they're unique implementations. You get back to that snowflake problem,
yeah.
Which means when the disaster ends, when whatever required that equipment ends, you lose it. It goes away. I want to be able to keep it alive, if not running in the same exact condition.
Yeah. It's not just cloud on your terms. It's cloud on your wheels.
Yeah. And always being able to work on it, continue to improve it. And you know, if you get to a point where you want to depend on it more, you could be doing in-country Azure Stack. I just see the middle market, the sort of rack space types of the world that are not Microsoft or Google or Amazon, but they are in between with more boutique offerings and might see that there's an opportunity in a country where the big players haven't come yet to say, I'm just going to implement Azure Stack and sell it as my boutique service.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a big opportunity there. I was beginning to wonder if I was ever going to really see any Azure Stack myself in person, because my core market is, you know, the SME market.
Well, plus you are in Ireland, and one of the biggest data centers in the world is in Ireland, for crying out loud.
Yeah, we've loads of data centers, but they're outside of my market.
Ah, I see.
So they're outside of distribution. They usually deal directly with Microsoft or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I was beginning to think recently, you know what, we would have lots of Microsoft partners with SPLA or hosting licensing agreements for doing different things. And I'm wondering now if, you know, Azure Stack is something that they'll consider. If the costs are right for them, sure, it might be something that they would look at. It just, the tricky bit there would be they'd need the billing systems and stuff where they can consume that data. And maybe that's something to do with that CloudDyne acquisition that Microsoft made recently.
Right.
That could have an impact on Azure Stack, and where they could produce the billing data that, you know, an Azure Stack customer can easily consume and process. The same way as we do with Azure billing data at the moment.
It's going to get interesting when this gets to scale to see, say, a big SaaS provider trying to decide, does it make more sense for us to run Azure Stack or just run it on Azure? And this is just trying to figure out margins and flexibility for certain customers. Like maybe for the West, because there is so many data centers, you just run on Azure. But when you have an important customer in an area where there isn't a nearby cloud data center, you put one in for them.
Yeah, I suppose our wacky friends in the US Congress, Senate, and White House could, you know, change an awful lot of data sovereignty things over the next coming years.
Well, I'm a Canadian, you're an Irishman, so we'll be polite to our American friends, but wow, you guys are really having a go at it, aren't you?
Yeah, we're right at the center of it with an Outlook mailbox.
So. Oh, yeah, no kidding. That stuff is all tied to Ireland, but so far the courts have fallen on the side of privacy, so hooray.
Yeah, we'll see how... We'll see how the Supreme Court rules on this one.
Yeah,
you never really know.
You never really know, and it is coming. Yeah, the law is a funny, funny thing. Although at the same time, the EU seems to be clamping down even further on data privacy.
Yeah, we've a lot of stuff happening, and the big Y2K at the moment is GDPR.
Right.
So, I think that's going to be driving a lot of last-minute purchases next year, and, you know, I have a colleague who reckons that GDPR is actually going to be pushed back because it seems like business is so unready for it.
Right. Compliance is going to be so hard.
Yeah. And, you know, there's talk that Microsoft aren't going to be compliant with this until May.
Well, isn't the due date May?
Yeah. It all feels very... Everybody's waiting until the last second. Now, it's hard. That's probably a bit unfair for Microsoft because they've such a large, you know, organization and product stack and services stack.
And I don't know how sympathetic the EU is going to be to Microsoft, but I suspect if a Deutsche Bank or a Siemens or, you know, large European companies also struggle to implement, they might give them a little more breathing room.
Yeah, and non-compliance fines are going to be significant. It's a percentage of revenue is a fine.
Yeah.
Though it depends on what country you get done in. If you get done in Ireland, you're probably laughing because our data protection commissioner literally has an office above a mini market.
Well, I think generally when you're talking about these mega corporations, everything is negotiable.
Yeah, well, our data protection commissioner is the office that's responsible for investigating the likes of Facebook and Google in Europe.
Okay. Good luck.
So, yeah, things are probably fine for the American corporations in Ireland.
Well, yeah, we'll see what happens. But the intent of the GDPR is not a bad thing. We do have to get more serious about...
It's taking responsibility.
Absolutely. And I think especially in this, the behavior around breaches is the one that's killing me. Right. It's that it should be a crime to not take responsibility and to not properly notify and mitigate as necessary. So, you know, in that sense, I think we're going to start seeing examples of just requiring companies be responsible. I just don't see it as all that different than you have to put sprinklers into your buildings, right? This is about basic safety.
It's professional negligence.
I totally agree.
You know, I'm amazed when, you know, I'm asked to go out an end customer and he'll go out and you start asking questions like, what's your patching strategy? Oh, we don't patch.
Yeah. It works. Leave it alone.
Okie dokie. And you start poking around the registry and you start seeing things and you go, so when did you clean up that particular malware?
Right. How many exploits are already running inside your space right now?
Yeah, it's just insane. And an awful lot of it comes down to bad hiring practices.
Yeah.
I'm amazed. And that starts at the very top. It's from the C level all the way down. They just don't appreciate what IT is. Mm-hmm, they just assume that IT people suck. So they hire bad IT people.
And it's self-fulfilling prophecies.
It is, yeah. And it's all the way down the stack from the CIO to the IT managers to the team leaders to the staff levels. When you meet one of these bad IT organizations, and I've met a few of them over the years, and they don't improve because, you know, the bad people get promoted and they hire more bad people.
Right. And the good people flee the place because they're not happy. You know, they understand how messed up things are.
I've been there. I've walked out of contracts because I didn't want to be associated with some of the disasters that were coming. And it's shocking. And, you know, these aren't small companies. These are big companies.
Yeah.
I can think of a Japanese finance company and a German finance company where I've seen that sort of thing. And it's just been kind of disgusting.
Yeah, it's chilling. Well,
yeah,
you got to think beyond just the cost and into its real asset value and the risk of the organization. And I wonder if this kind of legislation isn't going to help that you simply have to take it more seriously.
I eventually, when the fines start coming down, if they start coming down, that will certainly shake things up.
It'll provide a coherent ROI. How's that for a polite way to say you're going to get your ass kicked?
Ooh, you sound like a consultant.
There you go. Hey, Aiden, always fun to talk to you. And I'm excited to see where Azure's getting to these days. I'm thinking it'll be more of the same.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Lots of change. It's never boring.
You bet. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.